So, like, my main elevator pitch for Mutmacherei is that we try to change the conversations and move from telling each other what a terrible place the world is to what works, how we can overcome the challenges, who does what, what's already happening. And that's a completely different conversation.
That is Simply Focused with Elva Cherney and Dominic Gilda for live and joy indeed.
We've got a brand new exciting episode for you. Please welcome your host, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godad.
Hello and welcome back. We are back in Austria again after a wonderful tour of the UK and some time in Switzerland. We are now in Upper Austria and just came back from a wonderful gathering of the Austrian Solution Circle. And we are here today with Ira Molay. Hi, Ira.
Hi, Elfie. Hi, Dominic.
Oh, this is a dream coming true for me. I was waiting for this conversation with you for quite a while, Ira, and I'm very excited to be here with you today on Zoom. You're the founder and chief encouraging officer of the Mutmacherei. This is what we will talk about today. We know each other for quite some years, and I remember when we met for the first time at the consultancy company, we saw each other, and there was something very special between the two of us, which like always brought up sparkles and ideas, and sitting together with you is always not only delightful, but very, very inspiring for me. So I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, Elfie, thank you so much for this wonderful introduction. I can only reciprocate. I hold such dear memories of, you know, meeting you then and working together, and being on your podcast is such a, you know, delight for me. I'm really very, very happy about that and greatly looking forward to our talk.
And we are on Zoom today and you're in Vienna.
Yes.
So, Ira, you studied business administration and after that you went to work in the banking field before you became an executive director of Greenpeace Austria and moved into the sector of working with NGOs. You're a business consultant, you're working with individuals in coaching, and well, one of the things that we are very much looking forward to talk with you today is your work with the Mutmacherei. You're founder of the Mutmacherei and chief encouraging officer, which actually spreads from every cell of your body in every conversation I have with you and with every conversation I see you have with other people. And you're also a big, big fan of iridium flares. And we are curious to talk about that today and to see how this all fits together in your work.
I'm really looking forward to that as well and quite curious to see how it all fits together.
So before we come to that, what fascinates you with solution focus?
Okay, I guess I have to take several approaches to that. So what fascinates me about solution focus, particularly when I listen to, you know, your podcasts and you guys from this community talking about that, it always reminds me, you know, isn't this really what life is about? Now, when I think of maybe not nature, but for instance, in the middle of a city, yeah, where you have all those potholes and nooks and crannies where, you know, a tiny leaf comes out and a tree grows and grass appears all of a sudden. And solution focus always reminds me of that. You know, it's just life moving towards the light, towards, you know, where something can grow and develop. And that's just a very beautiful thing. And when I listen to you guys, it's always so fascinating how efficient it is, how positive it is. Yeah, just very touching. You know, there's this sense of sort of lightness involved, which I like so much. And the reason why I said I have to take like a varied approach is that I'm not a solutions focused practitioner. I'm not part of this sort of branded community. I do work with solutions as well, but the meaning is a slightly different one. It's like a different part of, you know, looking at the whole spectrum.
And you do a lot of things that remind us very much of how we practice solution focus, especially with the Mutmacherei, inspiring changes as chief encouraging officer, and also very much looking for what is working already towards those changes. So what is the Mutmacherei and what do you do there?
Yeah, maybe I should start a little with how I came to found Mutmacherei, because there's a part of the explanation already contained in it. Before I founded Mutmacher, I worked as a coach for personal growth. You know, in this capacity, I had a lot of focus on what sort of encourages people, gives them strength, gives them hope, makes them move forward. And I realized, of course, that the influence that the mass media have on us on a daily basis are not very helpful when it comes to this, because they mainly focus on the negative, on alarming, on bad things that happen all over the world. And this started to sort of worry me in a way. And I first started off with a couple of colleagues to found what we called a Good News Initiative, which started off with, on the one hand, writing to, you know, big news outlets and asking them to bring sort of positive things as well. And we also encouraged people to add, like, instead of a PS to their letters or emails, to attach a GN for good news. And after a couple of years, this later on developed into Mutmacherei. Mutmacherei was founded 8 years ago. And the situation I was in at that moment, it was, you know, after the financial crisis had taken place and after Fukushima and all that. So there was a lot of heaviness and big challenges going on. And they got to me as well. So it was a period in time I was quite subdued in my mood and really looking for something, you know, positive and uplifting. And I was very successful in looking for that because I came across so many wonderful things. And I immediately realized what effect it had on me. So I started to collect a lot of, like, links about interesting initiatives that tried to deliver change in the field of ecology, economy, society. And for, I don't know, a year or two, I was just, you know, collecting this and being happy about it, and at the same time thinking to myself, yeah, are you crazy? What are you doing? You know, it's just putting so much time into this and it doesn't go anywhere. And I remember one morning I was under the shower and I had this sort of inspiration, and I knew, okay, it's called Mutmacherei, which unfortunately doesn't really translate. It translates into something like encouragery, which doesn't work. And the image I had in front of my mental eye was something like a mind map that contains all these positive examples. And this is what I actually did. So to break down Mutmacherei, it actually now works on many levels. On the one hand, it is giving very concrete, positive examples of initiatives, projects, all kinds of things, little or big steps into be it sustainability, be it a different way of doing business. And the idea is to encourage people to show them how much is already done across the world in big or small steps by private initiatives as well as by states or by companies, social businesses. But there are many more levels, which I guess we can still talk about.
So it's really about looking at what works already towards a world that we would like to live in. So this preferred future, how could the world look like? How would we like the world to look like? And also finding those initiatives that go into that direction already.
Exactly, yes. You've really nailed it with this expression of the preferred future, because what might lead to misunderstandings, or sometimes does when I explain it, is that people say, well, the things that already work, they don't work anymore. Yeah. So it's not focusing on the present and saying everything is fine, but it's focusing on progress towards a preferred future. And Mutmacherei tries to come up with pieces to the puzzle or a mosaic of possible answers to what your preferred future might be.
And what are some of the examples of the initiatives that go in that direction already?
Okay, so this starts from very small things, very local things like community gardens, maker spaces, to bigger things, you know, when, for instance, a state passes a new law that tries to ban food waste, or when a large corporate says, okay, we really have to move in a more sustainable direction, reduce our CO2 emissions, and, you know, like the whole bandwidth in between, because the approach that I take is people have different ideas about their preferred futures. So some believe in the force of the market and think it can be solved there. Others think people have to sort of solve it in cooperatives and smaller units and working together in communities. And the idea is to, you know, come up with suggestions that move in a good direction, sort of for everyone to pick something.
So what is your preferred future?
Oh, my preferred future is a world that is a good place for everyone. I strongly believe that we have enough resources to provide a good life for everyone on this planet. My preferred future is one where people work together all across the globe, where we sort of work towards a common goal. And I guess the challenges that we currently have when it comes to, you know, our climate and everything that is related to it would give enough possibility to really solve these challenges together. And I think we should move really, you know, in the direction of to cooperate instead of to compete, to go much more into collaboration, into co-creation, into trusting each other, into having good relationships and good conversations.
What a lovely preferred future.
And you're doing that with the Mutmacherei. You can go to the website. You'll find everything in the resource section of this podcast. And you're also doing that as chief encouraging officer wherever you go. You just told us this lovely story about the Fridays for Future gathering, where you encouraged people to really look on what's already working and spreading those good news and maybe also be more effective through that.
Yes, that's like my contribution that I always want to give, is to just remind people of, do we look enough at what is already working, or where we have already made some kind of progress, some kind of movement into the right direction? And I guess there is something like a well-learned reflex in our society to focus more on the problems. And of course, it's important to look at that as well and to analyze it and to, you know, have a good picture of it. But we shouldn't forget to look at the other side of reality and of truth, and that is always, okay, what have we already achieved? Where have we made progress? What is already working? And that's like my mission, to sort of always direct the attention there.
Oh, and we would even go as far as saying we don't need to analyze the problems, but really do more of what you're doing to come faster, closer to our preferred future.
Yes, I know. And I guess that's, on the one hand, the interesting intersection of the work that we each do. And on the other hand, also the difference, because that's why I mentioned, you know, solution means something slightly different. So when I talk about solutions in the context of Mutmacherei, it is regarding specific challenges like climate change and so forth. And I guess it's important there to have a good understanding of the problem, in the sense of that, you know, scientific facts play a big role there. And we recently see this tendency of putting everything just in the domain of opinions, and facts don't count anymore. And I guess that's not a very good direction, because, you know, challenges like climate change, they are not subject to whether you believe in it or not, and what opinion you have on it. So a good understanding of these challenges and problems is, of course, essential. But what I want to achieve is that people don't get stuck in analyzing the problem and, you know, sort of fighting on what the next figure after the decimal point is, but really get moving and get active instead and work towards those solutions, which we already know enough about.
And how else do you do that?
So a lot of our work is online, by just communicating these examples through our Facebook page, our blog, our newsletter. But we also do activities in, let's say, the public space, which are very local then. So, for instance, we have a form of that. It's called Mood in the City Walk, which is like courage in the city, where we visit projects and initiatives that can serve as such an example.
You go there with the participants and people, yes, who join you, and you walk with this group of people through those projects.
Exactly. And the idea behind this is, when participants hear about change and the change makers, they often think that it's either superheroes and the participants themselves could never be able to achieve anything like that, or they believe it's like weird people, you know, who do crazy things. And what we want to show with these walks and these visits is that it's very sort of ordinary people who just have a passion and who just sort of throw themselves into what they believe in, with all the struggles that are involved, and which they are very free and open to talk about. And it's incredibly encouraging for people, because they sort of catch the enthusiasm and the passion and the fire of it. And it gets sort of this touch of being inspiring on the one hand, but being something, you know, like normal on the other hand.
So it's really about experiencing and seeing those examples, getting in touch with those people. And also, I can imagine that you will go out there changed and think, oh, we could do something too.
Exactly. Yeah. So the idea is that people get inspired and that they start thinking about, well, what could I do? Yeah. And there are so many possibilities. So, for instance, you could join one of these initiatives, yeah, and just ask them, well, where do you need help? And the help does not mean that you have to be, I don't know, a gardener or have to be an engineer who knows how to build solar panels. But if you're an accountant, you know, these small initiatives, they might be so happy if someone just gives them their accounting services. And there are myriads of ways in which you can participate. And I've made the experience that, you know, there are so many formats out there where people are sort of asked to develop ideas how they can change the world. And they always have to start from scratch. I've realized that this is sometimes hard for people. And when I sort of deliver a presentation, giving these examples, they are very grateful because they say, well, now I have a million of ideas what I could do. So that's the idea behind it.
So what feedbacks do you receive from your participants when you do this encouraging walks through the city?
Mostly the feedback is that they are very encouraged. And this is actually how I came up with the name Mutmacherei, because people said, well, you know, when I came here, I was a bit depressed about the state of the world. And now you've really encouraged me. You've given me hope that a lot is going on. People say it's very uplifting and they want to get more in touch with this kind of energy on the one hand, because there's always a lot of, you know, buzzing activity going on with these initiatives. But I guess it's mainly about this positive outlook that they're interested in and that they want to be part of.
So lately we talked about also collectives and also bringing ideas like that or also solution focused more to collectives. And there are different initiatives in our solution focused world, like with the solution focused manifesto and others, of collectivizing solution focused towards social change. And it was fascinating that you also have those collective ideas. So what are they about?
Well, my basic idea always was to reach as many people as possible. So first of all, I would like Mutmacherei to become like a movement. And I think it also has to do with the fact that we are not only individuals with our personal sentiment of how we feel, how optimistic or pessimistic we are and all that, but we are also connected to other people, and how we feel, what kind of outlook we have onto our future also radiates to other people. And it forms something like a common ground or a soil that can be fertile or not. Yeah? And I'm more and more thinking about this soil that we all share and to what extent it is also getting poisoned. And poisoned in the sense that so many people are sort of hopeless and quite depressed about the state of the world. And there is something like a feedback loop with media and all that, that sort of reinforces that. And I think that we can all make our contribution and take our share of responsibility to renew this soil and to turn it into something very fertile by giving it something like organic ingredients and by radiating positivity, by focusing on what works, by talking about our preferred futures, and in that way, making sure that, you know, our soil is sort of improved day by day.
Mm. So really also this interactive view of we all influence each other mutually, and it makes a difference on how we see something and how others see it, and as a whole collective, what we focus on and how we talk about things.
Yes, and I get much, much more connected to each other than we actually realize, because so much in our lives is so fragmented and so like hurried at the present moment that sometimes people don't even find the time to really connect. So I guess, you know, creating spaces where people can connect and reminding them that it's important what we talk about and how we talk about could make such a difference. So like my main elevator pitch for Mutmacherei is that we try to change the conversations and move from telling each other what a terrible place the world is to what works, how we can overcome the challenges, who does what, what's already happening. And that's a completely different conversation. And by spreading this out like roots to trees, this is like the direction that I would like to take it. And this is, I guess, the level where we're all connected.
It's interesting, this soil metaphor, really kind of on the ground. And your other interest is space.
And I remember 7 years, 8 years ago when we met and then worked together, you started telling me about iridium flares and your fascination about that. And it's just exciting to see how this interest really changed your perspective on so many things.
Yes, that's a quite a large topic. So now you've sort of pushed me out of the closet with my space enthusiasm. Well, maybe I should sort of start at the beginning and explain a little what those mysterious iridium flares are. You know, actually, I've been introduced to them on something like a cocktail party. A friend told me about them and I got curious and thought, well, I can't imagine what it's like. I want to see this phenomenon. So what it is that it's basically satellites. They're called iridium satellites orbiting the Earth, and they have very shiny antennas. And when the sunlight hits them at a certain angle and reflects them back to Earth, you can see it. It's a bit like a shooting star, but it takes much longer and it's predictable. And there are apps where you can, you know, find out when these iridium flares happen. And I had thought once I've seen it, I'll be done because it's not that interesting. But after I'd seen it, I was so fascinated. I wanted to see it again and again and again, and it made me so happy. And I was really thinking about, why does this make me so happy? And I realized that it's like the echo of all the ingenuity packed into these little phenomena in the sky. It's first of all the ingenuity of the people who were able to build these things and send them up to space. And it's the ingenuity of the people who are able to calculate when these flares will appear and put that into an app. And well, I wouldn't call it ingenuity, but I was proud of myself that I first managed. I didn't have the app yet to find out where to find them in the sky. And it looks like an appearance in nature, like a natural phenomenon, while it is a technical one. So there's such a lot of beauty involved in it. And the fascinating thing for me was that it didn't stop there, but that I, you know, started to research on what not only the flares are about, but those satellites, what they actually do, why they are up there, what their story is. And this led me to a very, very fascinating journey. So I'm a person, I very much like to take things to a metaphorical level or a meta level and look for patterns and parallels and translate it back into my life. And this has actually made me realize so many similarities and so many beautiful things. For instance, when you think of the architecture of this satellite constellation, as compared to other satellite constellations, it's fascinating. And it reminds me of, you know, the changes that organizations take in their communication structures or how they develop. So these iridium satellites, they do not, as all the other satellites do, all the other satellites sort of communicate back to Earth. For instance, when you have a telephone call, so they connect back to Earth and then to the next telephone. And the iridium satellites, they're the only ones who can sort of communicate between themselves. So it's a non-hierarchical way of communicating. It's very much more distributed. Or they always communicate like to the satellite before and behind them and to the ones left and right.
So they are real role models.
Yes, exactly. They are absolutely role models for, you know, how connection in our society could work and how fascinating it could be. So to think of, okay, who are those four people around you who, if you pass on information that's important to you, could sort of form this constellation and this network together with you. Oh, and one of the really remarkable things about the Iridium satellites is that they have truly global coverage. So this means they have connectivity irrespective of whether it's about a phone call to a research team in Antarctica or monitoring the temperature in a truck with perishable goods in the outback or tracking the floater of the ocean cleanup project in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And the best thing, what I like about it so much, so when you, for instance, travel the world with your RV, you probably need to switch SIM cards in your phones and use different country codes all the time. And for instance, with the Iridium satellite phones, you have only one country code that covers the whole globe. And, you know, I like to think of it as the country code of planet Earth. Isn't that beautiful? And another one is I started to immerse a bit in orbital mechanics, at least as far as I, with my non-existing technical background, could get there. And there's so much that is so counterintuitive. Where people say, well, wait a minute, this can't be, it isn't logical at all. So, for instance, that's the sad part of the story. Those satellites that produce the flares, unfortunately, don't exist anymore. Only one of them, which will be taken down next month. So they have to be taken down, and they were exchanged for a beautiful, shiny, wonderful new constellation, but it can't produce the flares anymore. When the satellites are taken down, you know, everybody talks about sort of slowing them down. So when they come down, they get slower, and that's not true. So satellites can travel at certain altitudes, and the higher they go, the slower they are, and the lower they go, the faster they are. And that's something where everybody says, well, it can't be. But it made me think about, you know, when we try to change perspective in our lives. You know, for instance, when we say, okay, I want to think about something, I go to, let's say, a retreat. So what you actually do is you try to get a bigger distance, like a higher altitude towards Earth. So if you think of like your life is the Earth and you are the satellite that orbits it. So you try to gain a bigger distance. And this usually means you slow down so you can have a better look at things. You slow down. And when you get back to your everyday life, what usually happens after such a retreat, people have all those nice ideas how it will work out. And then they are sort of swallowed up by everyday life because the closer you get, the more things start to sort of race again and get very quickly again. Hopefully you don't burn up on re-entry, but this is what happens to the satellites. Or another thing, you know, satellites, they need energy for doing maneuvers. So when they want to change their altitude, they need energy for that. And the same is true when we change something in our lives, we need energy. And the interesting thing is there are several sources of energy. It can be fuel, but it can also be solar energy. It can be so-called momentum wheels that are basically like heavy wheels of metal that spin and that are powered by an electric motor that is again powered by solar light. And what I did at some stage when I was working on a project, I tried to sort of nourish myself with these metaphors. So I did not ask myself the usual self-coaching questions, but I said, okay, what if I were like a space team doing a project in space? What would be the things that I would have to take into account? What would be the questions that would be asked from this team? And this was absolutely fascinating. I mean, apart from the fact that it was quite some heavy mental gymnastics, taking up so many roles, I looked at things from a completely different angle. So there's such an amount of fascination in it for
me. Can you share some questions you came up with?
Well, those questions had to do with, for instance, how many satellites will I have? So this project, what does it actually involve? How many satellites are there? Then how many launches do I need? How many rockets do I need to get them up? Then what is the purpose of these satellites? And this, of course, translates to target groups. Who do I want to reach with this? And the altitude also has to do with, you know, there are like TV satellites. They travel at a different altitude than, for instance, telecom satellites. So the usual answers that you want to come up with for, let's say, marketing questions or something like that, to not frame them in this usual context, but like what kind of weight do you need? What rocket fuel? What altitude? It's really a completely different approach.
Oh, I love these questions. They inspire me already by just listening to them. How many launches do we need? And what possibilities for getting energy do we have?
Yeah, exactly. So I once thought about this. What is when I need to sort of start my momentum wheels? What is my momentum wheels? You know, where do I find this? How does this retranslate? And of course, the answer would be different for every person and for every situation. And for me at that stage, it was okay. I need more sort of physical movement. Yeah.
So Ira, how else does this all go together with the work you do at the Mutmacherei?
Actually, it was the space part that sort of fit the pieces of the puzzle together for me as well. So, you know, thinking about rockets and satellites and also the International Space Station, for instance, how it orbits Earth and the beautiful, stunningly beautiful and touching pictures that they sent down to us, you know, this also had an effect on me. On the one hand, a very grounding and comforting one, because it made me realize that we are actually really Earthlings and Earthbound creatures. So when you hear the astronauts talk about what they have to do to adapt to this zero gravity environment, you know, our bones, our muscles are not built for this environment. We are sort of built for gravity, and we often dream of this lightness and, you know, not being subject to gravity, but we're not really made for it. And it's something that, you know, many people sort of begrudge a little, and it was comforting to me to sort of know that this is actually the way it should be. Another very interesting thing was when I accidentally came across an online course, a MOOC, which was presented by a former NASA astronaut, Ron Garron, who had lived on the International Space Station for half a year. And he had written a book called The Orbital Perspective, which is sort of built on the overview effect and everything that he had learned from his visit to space. And, you know, the overview effect basically deals with the fact that nearly all the astronauts who've seen the Earth from space are fundamentally changed by this experience. And they're also surprised because, of course, they've all seen the images. Yeah? So they think there's nothing new to be seen. And when they experience it themselves, they're completely blown away because they very quickly realize this actually planetary view of things, that we're just, as Ron says, one people on one planet traveling towards one common future. And what also touched me very much is that he says it's essential that we have a positive vision of the future. And this is where sort of all the pieces of the puzzle came together for me.
I remember very vividly when we talked about the overview effect for the first time, you were sharing this story when they went to the moon for the first time and everyone was focused on the moon. But then the most exciting thing was not the moon, but looking back to the Earth and seeing what changed there. And this was quite magical for me because, well, it's really looking somewhere else, but then you look back on what you have and get to treasure it in a whole different way.
Yes, exactly. So this was celebrated around last Christmas, you know, the 50th anniversary of this Earthrise image, where people thought everything, you know, the whole journey was about the moon. And actually, you know, there was this magic phrase when they said, and then we turned the camera around. And looking back at the Earth and seeing this beautiful, beautiful blue planet in emptiness of space and then this blackness of space, it really changed the perspective that humanity had on itself. And what the people who experienced this now try to say is, well, it sort of touched us, it sort of started the environmental movement, but we have not yet fully understood it, and we have not yet fully reacted to what it really means. And I guess part of this experience also has to do with really understanding what our atmosphere is. Because when we look up from down here, you know, the sky seems so blue and endlessly blue, but when you look at it from outside, it's just an incredibly thin and vulnerable layer that protects us, and that is basically everything we have. So if this is destroyed, we're done. It's our life support system, and it's incredibly important that we take very good care of that. You know, I talked about the soil that we all share, and the atmosphere, of course, is another very good example. It cannot be fragmented into nation states. There is not an Austrian atmosphere or an English or US atmosphere. It just doesn't work this way. So it's something that connects and protects us all, and I think that's very important to understand.
And what differences does this knowledge make for you and for the Mutmacherei and your work at the Mutmacherei?
For me, it brings the whole thing on the one hand to a very emotional level, because it's so touching, but in a beautiful way and in an encouraging way. I guess it brings it down to a level where we have an image and a vision of something that is really worth fighting for, because this is our home and it's everything we've ever known, and we cannot live anywhere else. Yeah, so it's our shared home that we should take care of. And it always helps me to bring the positive vision of the future into a larger context. And I think this is really the driver for any kind of progress, for any kind of evolution or development. You know, how can it fit into a larger context, and what is like the next big thing that we are part of?
Talking about space and talking about looking at things from a distance, if you look at your learnings over these years with the Mutmacherei and also with all the other work you did, if there is one learning, one thing that was really crucial for you that could also make a difference for other people, what else might that be?
I guess the main learning for me, and a thing that is just so astounding and so beautiful again and again, is that there's beauty to be found everywhere. And in saying that, it sometimes takes a little practice. But I guess it's one of the most rewarding things, and it's another branch of Mutmacherei, where we just try to train people on consciously directing their attention towards positive things and positive experiences. And it is something that I've been practicing for a long time now, where looking up towards the sky has also helped me doing this. It's realizing that if you look for it and if you're ready to embrace it, to see it, to find that there's beauty to be found everywhere, in every place, in every person, in every situation.
Wow, thank you. So let's come to the challenge of the week.
My challenge of the week is actually an invitation to try just what I've just been talking about, and that is to go out into the world and first start with noticing what you notice. What captures your attention? For instance, when you walk, you know, I live in Vienna, so when I walk around, where is my attention directing itself to? Because usually it just happens like that. So is it the shopping windows? Is it advertisements? Is it things that are broken? Or is it like, I don't know, we have such a amount of architectural beauty. Is it the sunlight reflected in a beautiful building? Is it a smiling kid, a beautiful face? And to first of all, just notice what grabs your attention. And in the next step, to consciously try to spot the positive things. And you can also do this in steps. For instance, focus on, okay, what positive or beautiful things do I see? Then what do I hear? What do I experience on any other level? Or it can be when it comes to buildings, to people, to, I don't know, plants. There's a wide field for practicing it. And what I can say from my experience is it's a very rewarding thing, because I truly believe there is beauty to be found everywhere, and I would encourage everybody to just try it out and find the beauty for yourselves.
Thank you very much, Ira. And we are, of course, curious to hear from everyone how the challenge of the week worked for you. What went well? What did you discover? And what difference did this focus on beauty make for you? And of course, we are also curious to hear what inspired you in our conversation and what differences this makes for you. Please let us know and comment in the comment field on www.sfontour.com. Simply Focus Podcast, and then go to episode number 80.
Thank you so much for inspiring us and for telling us all those details about orbital mechanics and about the overview effect, and also connecting that to what you do. And it's such an important work, and there's so much solution focus in there, in seeing what works already, in focusing on those signs of progress that make us hopeful, in looking at we want the preferred future, and not only what I want, but really what we want together. As you said, it's all connected, looking from space, seeing that there's only one world, and we're traveling hopefully into a good future together, and kind of pointing with your perspective on those elements of solution focus that are really, really worthwhile too. And one thing that I got inspired was the overview effect, and I think it's the same when you look at what works already towards preferred future, and you find those many details, then you're changed, and it gets more and more difficult to not see them in the future. So it's kind of looking from space towards Earth, maybe different experience, but it reminded me very much on what happened with me when I first encountered solution focus and saw all the beauty in what's already working towards where I want to go.
Yeah, and I'm also curious what will emerge out of our conversations, because together with Ira and the Mutmacherei, we are in conversations about looking how we can change even more conversations.
Thank you so much, Elfie and Dominic. It was a wonderful experience for me, and you always inspire me such a great deal, and particularly this conversation, you know, seeing how incredibly well our approaches fit together. It was just very, very inspiring and uplifting. Thank you so much for the work you do and for how you help people, you know, how you give them the tools to enrich our common soil and to turn it into something really, really fertile and beautiful. And I can't can't thank you enough for what you do and your contribution. When I, for instance, listen to your podcast in the morning when I have breakfast, and I'm so looking forward to whatever will come out of this, because I would really like to put what we do in a common trajectory.
Yes, so stay tuned for more.
So thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Wow. What a great episode again. This was the Simply Focused podcast with Alfie Cherney and Dominic Odat, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.